Welcome to Le Rendezvous. My name is Garance Doré and I'm a writer with many stories, gossips, ideas, theories and points of views to share about the world we live in. I wanted to create this special moment to talk about all the things that are going on in our lives. So come, let's spend a moment together. Le Rendezvous is brought to you by Doré, the skincare line I co-created, wanting to bring more simplicity and efficacy to our lives. Check out the end of the episode for a special code just for you, the Rendezvous listeners. I thought I would start this new podcast by telling you a little bit about me. You might not know me at all, or you might have followed me for years, but I thought I would create a few episodes about where I come from and how I found my way. I also thought I would share them during the holiday time because I know a lot of you are going to be busy traveling, and also some of you are going to be at a very quiet moment of your life and that maybe you'd like to hear from a friend. So follow me. Part 1. Ajaccio to Paris. I was born in Corsica. Corsica is a small island in the middle of the Mediterranean. My parents are both immigrants, my mother from the north of Africa, she grew up in Algeria, and my father from Italy. My childhood was quite idyllic, if you just look at a photo. Corsica is one of these beautiful Mediterranean sunny islands. Think of Italy, just a little bit of a different culture. Proud mountains, blue seas. My father was a chef and he had a restaurant in one of these secret creeks that are very difficult to find. And it was a beautiful, amazing place. In the winter, we would all go back to the town where I would go to school, called Ajaccio. In the summer, I was this kind of wildling, running around from morning to night and just in love with nature, animals, poetry and reading, and this kind of solitary child. I was also a very good girl, working well at school, wanting my parents to be proud, and very, very shy, which if you know me today, you just wouldn't believe it. The thing is that I was constantly bored. There's two reasons. Number one, if you grow up in paradise, you don't know it's paradise. So, you know, I thought my childhood was the most normal thing ever. Number two is that as much as I thought Corsica is probably special because everybody tells me it's special, I felt like there was a big world out there. And I always had this idea that I should go out and explore it. My parents had me when they were very young, and my mom had always been this kind of super stylish, interesting, boisterous, funny type of character that takes all the room in her kids' lives. She was also incredibly inspiring, somebody who makes beauty everywhere she goes. We didn't grow up in money, we had nothing, but she created so much. I remember when she was young, she created a little grocery store in our village. I'm talking tiny little 5 meter square store. She ordered a few fruits and vegetables and goods to sell, but she just went into nature and got some flowers and made these beautiful baskets. Everything was just so beautiful. You'd want to buy something just to celebrate the atmosphere she had created. So I grew up with this kind of energy in my life, this really creative energy. My mom would be at home cleaning during the day and cooking and all that. And there was classical music and all the new modern cool music. And she was also a party woman. And there was just so much happening all the time. I think that inspired me tremendously. The child that I was slowly grew up to be a teenager. I was predictable and really angry. The frustration that I felt when I was young this is kind of, there is something else than what all of this is, which I didn't see in other kids, which was interesting. I was always trying to say, hey, what do you think? Should we just get out of here? And I didn't get the reaction that I thought I would get. It was funny. I felt a little bit different. I became an angry teenager. And one thing that I can remember that really imprinted my whole teenage years was finding magazines. I had always loved reading through the French Elles that were around the house and the Marie Claire's. Always loved this kind of ideal photos and stories and all these people making fantastic things of writers, actors. I loved models. I was a teenager in the 90s. So it was the big time of models, Cindy Crawford, Linda Evangelista. We are all dreaming of them. And Kate Moss came a little bit later. That was quite a thing. And I was already a little bit of a loner. I had a few friends, not many. I definitely wasn't the type of popular girl at school. I was more bookish, shy, in a little corner with my two friends, and a little bit hidden. And I had one thing that my friends didn't understand, and it was an incredible love for British magazines. At the time, in the 90s, it was The Face and ID and a few others, and they would be my absolute Bible. I discovered fashion, a different type of fashion, something that was less common, that was a little bit rebellious, different. It was the time of grunge. It was the time of rave parties. It was the summer of love, all these things. And I fell in that world as much as I could from Corsica with an absolute passion, absolute passion. Those magazines were monthly, so I would wait and count the days before I could buy a new one. Of course, I got them 3 or 4 or 5 months later than the date they had been published, but I didn't care. I just collected them. I should have kept everything. There was also Vingt Ans, which was a French magazine that every woman my age will remember, which was very interesting. There was all these young stylists that were different, and it was just a different point of view. There was Karin Rotfeld, Emmanuel Ault, before they became the establishment. The stories in there were interesting and funny and self-deprecating. And if you look back at all these things, you might find my inspiration. Of course, at that time, I had no idea what I would become. And that became a source of stress pretty quick. When you're 17, 16, 18, that's when people start being like, okay, what are you doing? What's going to be your life? And not only was I still a baby with dreams and nothing else, but I also had grown up in Corsica with immigrant parents, and all they were trying to do was find ways to make a living. And they had succeeded. Their restaurant had been very successful, and we had reached the middle class coming out of really, really nothing. My grandma was a cleaning lady, and suddenly my mom could buy her own car, and she even bought these beautiful Thierry Mugler dresses and went to Paris and bought some Jean-Paul Gaultier. So we had access to something financially, maybe, but definitely not in our minds. And I couldn't see anything in front of me. I didn't know where I would go, what I would do. And very few options were being offered. I have to go back a little because something quite important was happening in the background as well. I started wanting traveling so early that I had to find solutions on my own because nobody was doing it where I was from. In Corsica, summer for Corsicans was about getting fit and tan and going to the beach. But the only thing I was interested about is that I didn't have school and I could get away. So I started making deals with my mother because, you know, we're a family of hard workers and there was no way I was not going to work all summer. And I told her, look, if I work my ass off with you 1 full month, will you let me go away for a month. So I was working in July and leaving in August. I found this organization that would fly young people across the world. And that's how I started traveling on my own at 14. You would think my mom was crazy, but she always gave me a ton of freedom. And also it was a different time. I don't think the world was as scary as it is today. My first trip was in the UK. I went to London, and then I remember staying in Turkey for a while. That was my first big trip. And my second trip was the United States. I was 15. I left on my own. I went into a family there. There were wonderful people. And I saw how culture differs. I met all these kids from across the world. I saw life. I went to California, Orange County. For somebody who came and lived in LA a few years later, this is so interesting to see because now I have a completely different vision. And this trip changed my life, as did the other trips that I took later. A few years later, I had met my first boyfriend and his sister, who became my best friend, and they were living in Syria. So I did my first solo trips to Syria. Just would want to get away. I remember when I would travel, I would bring back little treasures. The first treasure that I brought back for myself was a pair of Converse. I think I was 13. It was nowhere you could find that in Corsica. I was the only one in the whole school to have a pair of Converse. People were looking at me like I was this kind of alien. It was very funny. So this curiosity was far-reaching. It had pushed me out of my island very early. And if I didn't know what I was going to do in my life, I definitely had seen other things. I was already reading English through the magazines and all the music that I was listening to. My best friend and my boyfriend were not living in Corsica. And when I was 16, I begged my mother. As you can see, I don't talk about my father so much because he was more passive and my mother was the chief of the family. I begged her to send me to a boarding school when I was 16. And of course, I chose this international boarding school in the south of France, where I met, again, people from all over the world. My new best friends were Iranian, Norwegian, people from really everywhere in the world. When it was time to start picking studies, I went and saw my mom, who by now you probably understood, she was a sort of high priest of my life, if not God himself. I had no independence. If my mom didn't say yes to something, it was very tricky for me. I could rebel. I wasn't an easy child, but I needed her approval constantly for everything. So when I was 17, it was time to choose my studies. I was strong, but very easy to break. I went to see her and I said, Mom, I want to study arts. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I want to study arts. This is the school where I want to go to in Paris. This is how much it's going to cost. This is how much I can work to cover the cost. And once I get to Paris, I'll find a job in a coffee shop. I'll make this work. The plan was very clear. I knew that I needed to be in a world of creativity. There was nothing that excited me more than that. And she said no. She actually didn't say no, because it would have been too easy. And if you say no to someone, they can come at you and they can, I could have been like, how can you say no? You can try to break it. But my mom was smarter and much more manipulative than that. Instead, she said, we can't afford it. And I had a strong sense of duty in my mind. And this is something that's very contentious. Still to this day, I'm telling you, I can't believe you did that to me. Remember, she was very young, very scared for me. Paris to us felt like a place to get lost, where nobody would find you. The big city, cars, people, the cold. We were living in a tiny island. And I can understand. I was pretty good at school, and she imagined something more safe and secure for me. And I was the first child, firstborn. You have a lot of pressure on your shoulders, and your parents still have a lot of energy to oppose you. The energy goes down as your brothers and sisters come in. Okay, I can't do that. I can't do that anymore. I'm just going to say yes. So she told me no, and my sense of duty popped up, and I was like, okay, I will do what most Corsican kids do and go to the south of France, to Aix-en-Provence, and I'll go to the Fac de Lettres, which is university. I won't study art because we're too scared that I'm going to end up, as she said, under the bridges. That's the image people have of artists or used to. And I'm going to study something serious. I did my best and chose literature because that's something that I always loved. And also studied English because I was pretty good at that. It was an absolute disaster. It's funny when you say no to yourself, to something that you know deep down is the right way. But something gets in the way, whether it's reality, whether it's your parents, whether it's money, that tells you, nope, you're not going to do this. And you're too young to realize how important that call is. But also, you don't know if you actually have any talent. You're not sure. It's very easy to speak from my age after having done all the things that I've done. It's more difficult when you're 17 and all you have is hope that you have a percent of the talent that you need to have to go into these careers. I think that when my mom said no without saying no, a little thing went dormant inside of me, and it would take years to wake it up again. I went to university, didn't work much, went through the years reluctantly, doing the minimum. I was always working on the side. All summers, during the winter, I was a supervisor. I was always making my own money. It was my way of being independent, of not relying on anyone. And you could say, well, why didn't you just go to Paris and do your thing? If you're able to provide for yourself, you could just have done that. I know. That's what I would tell myself if I met myself today. But again, I had this allegiance to the vision of my mother, and I had no other adult to tell me, hey, you know what? Why don't you tell her things like that? Or you know what? I'm going to talk to you, mom. Or you know what? Why don't you try this instead? Or you know what? Just believe in yourself. If you feel like there is something there, you're going to make it happen. I had no one like this. There was no other adult in my life. No one to guide me. She was the figure. What was interesting, though, is that in Aix-en-Provence, I was still with all my Corsican friends, having a fun life, going to university like a little bit, working, partying, like all the things that students would do. It was fantastic. I was living with my best friend. We were getting drunk every day. We were doing all of this. It was a wonderful life. There was a lot of panic inside of me because I think of being such a responsible type of person. And I was like, what the hell am I going to do? Through the years, I realized that most people that had chosen the same type of studies were becoming teachers. And that was basically the only reasonable choice that was being presented to me. And I thought, why not? Teachers in France have long vacations, and I was already starting to hatch plans to do my art, which I didn't even know what it was at that time. I just wanted to do art. I didn't know if it was singing or sculpting or drawing. I knew I had a talent for drawing, but it was just in its infancy and I had never really pushed. I just knew I wanted to do something creative. That's all I knew at that time. There was a point where there was a break. I don't know what took me, but I decided that I was going to move cities. Aix-en-Provence is this very lovely town. It's beautiful. It was very safe at that time. You can go everywhere walking. There's little shops and markets, and all the students live there. It's an absolute dream when you're young and coming from a small place. Your parents feel like you're protected. The thing is that there for me wasn't such a departure from where I came from. All the kids that I was surrounded with, even though I was starting to meet new people outside of my entourage, most people that were around me were from Corsica. So they had the same mentality, the same dreams. We were very formatted by where we came from. And it's difficult because usually in this type of small town, there aren't a lot of different professions that appear real to people. So if you're very successful in Corsica, you'll be a doctor or a lawyer. You can also be a successful entrepreneur. Maybe you have a restaurant. Maybe you open a store or a supermarket for the most successful. But that's kind of what you see around you. And then you have shepherds. You have, you know, people who work the land, things like that. Very rarely do you see successful artists. I had been lucky, and I forgot to tell you that. But the little village where I grew up and where my father had his restaurant was a place where a lot of celebrities, intellectuals, politicians, people like that would come. I remember being a kid and seeing Brigitte Bardot. All the Monaco family was coming with all their ships, the royal family. All the models came around, and I could see these people. My mom, being also this kind of flamboyant type of person, would be at the restaurant and meet a lot of them. People with a sense of the world who knew what was out there. And I do think that all these things had contributed to opening my mind, my trips, the people I'd met in my father's restaurant, or not even meet them, but just see them and be like, there are people like that, so chic and interesting and different and funny. The magazines that I had read, oh, wow, you can dress like that in a completely different way. All these things had completely opened my mind. And I think that I realized that by staying in Aix-en-Provence, in my bubble of Corsican friends, something wasn't going to grow inside me. I didn't know what was that thing, but I know I needed to help it grow. Or maybe I just, actually, that's me revising the past. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew I needed to break off with that. And that's how one day I took my stuff and I moved to Marseille. Marseille is this big town in the south of France. It is noisy. It is dangerous. It's the opposite of Aix-en-Provence. It is also filled with artists. There's a lot of theater to go see concerts. Life is really happening there. It was a tough move for me because I went on my own and was very lonely for a while. I left and didn't have friends, and I already had this sense that I wanted to start something completely new. Looking back now, I can tell you, I think I wanted to reinvent myself or discover myself. Or as we say in France, aller voir là-bas si j'y suis, which means to go see if I was there. So I took my stuff and went there. Experienced a lot of solitude. I will do a podcast about that solitude very soon. Meeting with my solitude also meant that I met with my creativity for the first time. Before moving to Marseille, I had always been in places with many people. Lived with a big family. We were noisy and always busy. Then moved in with my best friend, always surrounded with my Corsican friends and all the new friends I had made. There was always someone at our place. Never, ever any solitude in my life, ever. And there it was for the first time. I started doing stuff on my own. And one of these stuff was drawing. These years, my studies were really taking the backseat. I was working so much to make my own money, and I was quite successful at it. I was also starting to look for internships that were interesting. I remember my first one was at a radio station in Marseille called Radio Grenouille, which means Radio Frog. I don't know why it was called like that. It was the cool radio in the south of France. All the good music, all the cool people were working there. And you know me now, I was attracted to all that. I think starting to work when I was 13 had given me a lot of courage and a lot of sense of just make things happen. So I wanted to see what was happening at Radio Grenouille. And I just went there and I tried to be adorable and to feel essential. I don't know what I did, but they took me on and I started doing little work. I was terrible at that time because I had no idea about this world. I was the worst intern at that time because I had no idea about anything. I had come from a very protected world of being with the same friends, and suddenly here I was in the big town in that radio station with people that knew so much about music, that knew so much about what was going on. I had learned nothing practical at university. I knew a little bit about writers and philosophy and literature, but I didn't know how to make a copy. I didn't know how to type on a computer. I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to send an email. I didn't even really know how to give a call. I don't think I was the best intern, but these people at Radio Grenouille were so kind. And I remember one day the boss, who really liked me, said, "Hey, today, do you want to talk with me on my show?" And I said, yes, because I was always very voluntary like that. Even if I was the worst at everything, I had this kind of deep motivation to better myself and to grow. I said, yes. And I sat at the table and he asked me a question about something I was working on in the background. Maybe it was the new release of an album. And I completely froze. And I think that was the end of my career at that radio station. I felt so much shame for how bad I had been on air that I left. I don't like saying that, but I just want to say I wasn't always stellar. I had courage. I had balls, as they say today. I went for the things that I wanted and that were within reach for me. Definitely, I wasn't really good. As my life was evolving in Marseille, I started meeting a lot of artists. And that was another step in the opening of my mind. So far, everything I had encountered was very far away, whether it was the incredibly different, surprising, exciting, and inspiring life in California, or the UK, whether it was through the magazines that I was reading, the music that I was listening. But finally, in Marseille, things were real around me. There was that radio station. There were these concert venues. All of this was right there. And it was so exciting for me, and I had to be part of it. And now I was meeting with all these artists. They were my age. And they had a vision of life that was completely different than mine. I met with musicians, actors, and they didn't seem worried about their future. Everything that counted for them was the present and the new work they were doing, how they can make it happen. Whereas I always had this vision of life of, well, what am I going to do with my future? And the thing that I learned was that it was possible, even if you weren't the best artist in the world, that this was the life that you chose. And the second thing is that what's important is what you're doing right now, and that we were young and that it was fine. I also learned that it was okay to be broke, and that could be a choice that you make. I was always working so I could pay for my own life. And of course, I would keep doing that, but I was actually fine, and I didn't need to prepare myself for the type of job that would make a ton of money. I could see my friends living with very little and being very happy. Marseille was a very affordable town. My friends had created a beautiful life with just so little. They were sharing these big apartments together, having this lovely, fun, exciting life. They were going on vacation in ways that were inexpensive. And they have a gorgeous, wonderful life. And that showed me something completely different than what I had learned before, and that you can make the choice of earning less and trade that with more freedom. Those years were so formative for me. Seeing this life and participating in this life, I had slowly met more and more creatives and artists, and now I wasn't a weirdo anymore. Everyone around me was a creative. Everyone around me had dreams. There were different dreams than mine. They were more real. My best friend created a newspaper that's still running in the town. They created a radio station. And I was starting to write a little bit here and there and participate. And we were organizing concerts together. And there was such a joy and an excitement. And looking back now, I'm like, seriously, thank you for leaving your old world. Of course, I had kept friends in the old world because the idea wasn't to just dump everything. But I could see that they didn't understand my lifestyle at all. And that definitely created wedges between us. And that was really hard. It was the first time it would happen, and definitely not the last. As far as my parents go, you have no idea how difficult it was. There were two sides of me. There was the side that was having the time of her life, finally feeling like she was in her place, surrounded by crazy, funny, creative people. And then there was the part of me that was completely terrified that I had disappointed my mother, that I would live under the bridges, never do anything of worth out of myself. I started having anxiety attacks. There was something really wrong going on. But I just kept going, because once I found the momentum and all these people and this new life, there was something that was unstoppable. Even if it looked terrible from the outside, even if I was starting to be in my late 20s now and I had done absolutely nothing, there was something I couldn't stop anymore. I did a few other internships that really changed my life. And again, I wasn't great at them, but I just learned so much. One was at an art and essay movie theater in the Contemporary Art Museum of Marseille. Absolute life changer. I learned how creative people work in the movies. My boss was the most fascinating person I'd ever met. He taught me the history of cinema, the history of movies, La Nouvelle Vague, all these things. I remember the first time that I went for work. I had gotten that job the same way I had gotten the job at the radio station, by the way. I just went to the museum and was like, please give me a job. I'll do anything. I'm not scared of anything. I'll work full hours. I'll wake up super early. I'll make your coffee. Just give me anything. When people see you with an energy like that, it's very difficult to say no. That's how I had gotten that internship. And I remember the first day I went there, showed up, tried to be really well-dressed and all that. He told me, come with me. And we went to the theater, because this was a cinema. And he went in the back and left me sitting there alone in the room. And I could hear him working in the back. And he had been a projectionist. And he gave me hours the first day of showing me movies. So here I was alone with him in this beautiful movie theater. And he was showing me movies from Brian De Palma, Jean-Luc Godard, all these things, and explaining to me what he was seeing. And after hours like that in the dark together, we went back to our desks and he said, "Now you know why you're working." Can you imagine how happy I was? It was heaven for me. All of this was heaven. And I wasn't paid a cent. I was doing all that for free, but I just wanted to learn. I wanted to grow. After a few years being surrounded by this wonderful group of people, it is at 27 that I decided, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to become an illustrator. You know by now that I had no network. I had been to no art school. I had no connection. I didn't know anything, and I did not know any illustrators. I just had that dream. So I dropped everything, even my money jobs, because I thought you have to put yourself in danger because these money jobs are not helping you grow. You're just vegetating, doing nothing. You're not going to school anymore. This is not good. I stopped everything. I did have a little bit of savings from working all these years. And I told myself, now you make money with your art. And that was an absolute disaster. The life itself was a dream. At that time, I wanted to be a children's book author and illustrator. So I was just sitting at my desk trying to come up with kids' stories. After a year, I hadn't had one job, and it's not because I didn't try. I was really trying. I had given myself goals, challenges, objectives, and one of them was to go to Paris every 3 months and go show my portfolio to editors. And this lifestyle was really breaking my legs. After a year, I was like, I'm not making any money. I'm going to get really broke. My mother's prophecy is going to happen. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I'm going to need to go back to a money job. I kept going for a little bit, though. There was this deep voice that I hadn't really recognized at that time, but was like, keep going. The other part of me, the one I told you a little bit about earlier, was having a major breakdown. I was having a lot of panic attacks. I wasn't in a good place. This bid that I had done for my creative life was putting me in a state of panic that was incredibly bad. I think my mental health was really impacted, and my mom wouldn't want to hear about my career. I was officially the biggest disappointment of our life. And that was incredibly difficult for me because I had always been a good girl. I had always followed everything that she had wanted me to do. But I had no choice. It was either follow her lead and be unhappy or disappoint her and follow my path. This was probably one of the hardest moments of my life, but I just kept going. One day, though, I realized, okay, this is not going anywhere. I started making a tiny bit of money using my legendary courage of just opening doors and going to the local newspapers and being like, I'll draw for free. I'll do anything. Just let me work. Please let me work. And it had slowly started working. But I realized, wow, I'm never going to make money with that job. I realized, what? I'm going to be paid 100 euros for a week of work? This is never going to work. And that's when I started becoming really depressed. It's actually when I started working. Because before I started working, I could dream of my life and how it would be after I had my first job. But once I started having it, I was like, this life is impossible. This is not sustainable. I can't be an illustrator. I'm never going to make any money. Also, I'm not that good. And what's going on? But throughout all my tests and trials and the growth and the change of my style and the fact that I slowly had dropped trying to make children's books and slowly had drifted into fashion illustration, I also had learned to scan a drawing to edit it in Photoshop. I had created my own website. I love learning things on my own, by the way. And I had gotten myself a computer and I had discovered blogs. By then I was maybe 30, which you can imagine added to the whole background of drama of my parents being desperate about me. Basically, everybody in my family thinking I was the ultimate loser, which I was. Nobody believing in me around me. I was confirming what everybody thought of me, that I was failing, completely failing at life, that I was 30, that I had nothing in my name, that I was broke. I was really at the bottom. I was really confirming all the prophecies that my mom had made for me. I was an absolute loser. And there was a sense of despair the day I told myself, I should open a blog. There was a sense of hope and excitement because I loved what was going on with blogs, which at the time were these very intimate diaries and opening up people's lives. I knew I could make something out of it. I just didn't know what. I just decided, why don't I put my illustrations out there? I'm too broke to go to Paris now. All the art directors are not calling me back. Nothing is happening. But at least that way, maybe a few people out there will see my drawings. And that's how one day I opened my blog. And I said to myself, this is the last straw. This is the last thing you're going to try. If this doesn't work, you're going to find yourself a serious job. This is how at 31, at rock bottom, I opened my blog, put a few illustrations up, and just waited. Nothing came, of course, except after a few days, I could see movement. I kept publishing. I had told myself I would publish 2 or 3 times a week, I think, if I remember well, until one day. Came back to my blog and I looked and there was 18 comments. I will always remember. I think another blogger had spotted me and she had talked about me and she had sent me some people. And that's the day where everything started. Started getting interest from magazines. People started calling me. It went so fast. I opened my blog in June, and in July, my name was everywhere. It was crazy. Just telling you this makes me want to cry because it reminds me of where I was right before. And very soon I thought, I've got something here. At that time, you wouldn't talk to people about blogs because it was the thing that people with no life were doing, going online, sharing things. And that's a good thing about being so desperate is that you don't care. You just do what you have to do. And that's what I did. And as things were evolving, I finally decided, okay, something real is happening. I should move to Paris. This was the first part of the story of how I found my way. This was Ajaccio to Paris. And next time, I'll tell you about what happened when I moved to Paris and became one of the most famous fashion blogger in the universe. Talk to you soon. Le Rendezvous is brought to you by Doré. Minimize bathroom time and maximize outdoor time with our super simple routine of Made in France skincare. Use code PODCAST10 for 10% off your first order. Thank you for listening to Le Rendezvous. If you want to know more about me, find out about my newsletter and my community, find me on Instagram at Garance Doré or at my website at garance.world. And well, if you'd like to find out how to spell that crazy name, just check out the show notes. Until next time, sending you love.